Today is Friday, January 23rd, and you are listening to the World Socialist Website. The Rupture in the World Order. The World Economic Forum dominated by inter-imperialist conflict. By Roger Jordan and Keith Jones. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney painted a stark picture of a global capitalist system roiled by inter-imperialist rivalries and hurtling towards world war in a speech Tuesday to the World Economic Forum. Speaking before an audience of capitalist politicians, imperialist strategists, global CEOs and billionaire oligarchs, Carney declared the world to be at a turning point. This was not a mere transition, he insisted, but the rupture of the world order, and the beginning of a brutal reality where geopolitics among the great powers is not subject to any constraints. The collapse of the US-led post-Second World War economic and geopolitical order has ushered in a new era of great power rivalries, said Carney, in which the strong do what they can and the weak suffer what they must. Carney's remarks were a damning admission by the leader of one of the G7 imperialist powers that an imperialist-led struggle to repartition the world economically and territorially, akin to that which culminated in the imperialist world wars of the last century, is underway. Carney made no reference to America's would-be dictator President Donald Trump and mentioned the United States just once. But coming after a year of escalating trade war and belligerence from Washington, targeting ostensible allies and foes alike, it was clear to all that Carney was calling on the European powers to join Canada and ruthlessly asserting their own imperialist interests, including against the United States. Just in the 3 weeks prior to the opening of the World Economic Forum, the WEF, Trump ordered the invasion of Venezuela to abduct its president, Nicolas Maduro, and announced he was seizing the country's vast oil reserves, repeatedly threatened to wage war on Iran, demanded Denmark, a European Union state and fellow NATO member, cede Greenland to the US, and threatened 8 European countries with tariffs when they sent troops to Greenland to signal their opposition to his threat to seize the island by military force. Carney's attack on a rampaging US imperialism was all the more remarkable in that it was given by the head of the government of Canada, which for the past 8 decades has been America's closest economic, geopolitical, and military ally. For more than 50 years, up until 9/11, Ottawa and Washington boasted that they share the world's longest undefended border, some 5,500 miles, 8,800 plus kilometres long. However, as part of a drive to consolidate unbridled US domination over the Western Hemisphere in preparation for war with China and other great powers, Trump has hit Canada with a barrage of tariffs, threatened to scuttle the US-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, and vowed to use economic force to make Canada America's 51st state. Carney appealed to Canada's NATO allies to recognize reality, the rules-based international order, the euphemism that US imperialism employed to mask its post-World War II global hegemony, and from which Canadian and European imperialism benefited handsomely, has irreversibly collapsed. Citing a series of crises in finance, health, energy, and geopolitics over the past 2 decades, Carney stated, "Great powers have begun using economic integration as weapons, tariffs as leverage, financial infrastructure as coercion, supply chains as vulnerabilities to be exploited." Revealing more than he intended, he continued, quote, "For decades, countries like Canada prospered under what we call the rules-based international order. We joined its institutions. We praised its principles. We benefited from its predictability. We knew the story of the international rules-based order was partially false. that the strongest would exempt themselves when convenient, that trade rules were enforced asymmetrically, and we knew that international law applied with varying rigour depending on the identity of the accused or the victim. This fiction was useful, and American hegemony, in particular, helped provide public goods, open sea lanes, a stable financial system, collective security, and support for frameworks for resolving disputes. This bargain no longer works. Unquote. The WEF summit was itself overshadowed by a bitter dispute between American imperialism and its erstwhile European allies over the fate of Greenland, with European leaders warning that were Trump to act on his threats to seize Greenland, NATO and the transatlantic alliance would collapse. While their own speeches were less bluntly worded than Carney's, and still included calls for the transatlantic partnership to be revived, the leaders of the European Union and its principal states all called for a massive rearmament to develop strategic autonomy, that is, the capability to act independently of the US in the struggle to redivide the world. Trump wants full control over Greenland as part of his America First strategy to expel all non-hemispheric competitors from the Americas. He views total dominance over the Western Hemisphere, including the right to seize any assets, resources, territories, or waterways deemed vital to US national security. The so-called Donroe Doctrine, as a necessary precondition to waging war against Washington's more powerful rivals, China, Russia, and the European Union, to restore US global hegemony. On Wednesday, Trump pulled back from his Greenland tariff threat, dropping the 10% surcharge set to come into force on February 1st. He cited a deal on Greenland struck at a meeting on the sidelines of the WEF with NATO Secretary-General Mark Rutte, in which representatives of Denmark and Greenland took no part. No details of the deal have been made public, but reports suggest the US will be ceded bits of the Arctic island for an expanded network of military bases and given unlimited military control over its landmass, airspace, and territorial waters. Trump's foreign policy threats and sudden shifts resemble nothing so much as those of Adolf Hitler in the late 1930s. Just as the sharpening interstate conflicts recall the jostling between the imperialist powers in the years immediately preceding World War II. If a deal has in fact been reached over Greenland, it is likely to prove as durable as that which Hitler struck in September 1938 with Italy's Mussolini, the British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain, and his French counterpart Edouard Dalida over the fate of Czechoslovakia. Chamberlain infamously claimed he had secured peace in our time, but within months Hitler made fresh demands, carved up what remained of the Czechoslovak Republic, and set his sights on Poland. Amid the surge in great power rivalries, Carney has drawn the conclusion that an alternative imperialist alliance is necessary to counter Trump and the US. In his WEF speech, he tried to cloak the predatory character of such a project by repeatedly referring to Canada as a middle power, rather than the imperialist power that is, one as he himself conceded, that previously profited from US global domination, aggression and war. Middle powers must act together, he declared, because if we're not at the table, we're on the menu. The table he speaks of is the high table of imperialism, where territories are carved up, deals to monopolize the exploitation of natural resources and cheap labor are made, and the financial oligarchy extracts its pound of flesh. Carney's alliance of middle powers would be a partnership first and foremost with French and British imperialism, whose colonial empires bestrided the world until 1945, and with German imperialism, which twice in the last century sought to resolve its crisis by conquering Europe, while their world power is diminished, the imperialist appetites of the European powers are, if anything, greater today. Over the past year, Germany, France, and Britain have repeatedly thwarted Trump's efforts to reach an accommodation with Putin over the heads of the European powers that will give US companies and investors access to raw materials, markets, and geostrategic influence in both Ukraine and Russia at Europe's expense. Having invested heavily in the war on Russia, and lacking the ability to continue it alone, the European imperialist powers are determined to keep the US involved and escalate the conflict to secure their share of the loot and plunder. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, who explicitly praised Carney in his own WEF speech, heads a government committed to spending 1 trillion euro on war and destroying what little is left of Germany's welfare state. France's Emmanuel Macron has increased military spending and deployed the full force of the state against workers opposed to his austerity agenda. For his part, Carney boasted in his speech about his government's right-wing record at home, including tax cuts for the wealthy, public spending austerity, a doubling of military spending by 2030, and attacks on democratic rights, including a massive assault on the right to strike. Workers on both sides of the Atlantic can only oppose the revival of imperialist barbarism by unifying their struggles against all of the imperialist powers and their political representatives. The looming danger of world war is rooted in crisis-ridden capitalism, which will plunge humanity into the abyss, as it did twice in the 20th century, unless it is overthrown by a revolutionary socialist movement of the working class. The World Socialist website, an international committee of the Fourth International, fight to provide the revolutionary leadership required to unite workers' struggles internationally against war, attacks on democratic and social rights, and the growth of inequality into a mass industrial and political movement for the abolition of capitalism and the socialist transformation of society. For a general strike against ICE violence and Trump's dictatorship. By the Socialist Equality Party, US. The following statement will be distributed at demonstrations and protests organized in Minneapolis and other cities throughout the US on January 23, 2026. Today, workers and young people are taking to the streets in Minneapolis and across the US to protest the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, occupation of Minneapolis, the murder of Renee Nicole Good, and the Trump administration's escalating assault on democratic rights. There is a powerful and growing sentiment for mass action, expressed in calls for a general strike to demand an end to police violence, repression, and attacks on both immigrants and citizens. Today's protests are an important step forward, but January 23rd cannot be seen as an endpoint. Rather, they must become the launching point for a nationwide counter-offensive by the working class against the conspiracy for dictatorship. It is necessary to ask and to answer the question, what next? The response of the Trump administration to opposition is escalation and provocation. The White House is threatening to invoke the Insurrection Act, effectively placing Minneapolis under martial law. Active duty Army soldiers from Fort Bragg and the 11th Airborne Division in Alaska have been placed on alert for possible deployment to Minnesota. Vice President J.D. Vance traveled to Minneapolis on the eve of today's demonstrations to deliver a show of force alongside ICE agents, hailing their work and defending the murder of Good. Vance said he wanted to end the chaos in the city and called upon local Democrats to deploy police forces to suppress popular opposition, which he blamed on left-wing agitators. On Wednesday night, Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bovino led federal forces in a violent crackdown against protesters, deploying tear gas and making arrests outside a Minneapolis convenience store after a worker refused to serve them. Earlier in the day, ICE agents detained a 5-year-old child, Liam Ramos, who was used as bait to lure out family members. He and his father are now in an ICE prison in Texas. Every fundamental democratic right is under assault. A Department of Homeland Security, DHS memo leaked this week authorized ICE agents to break into homes without judicial warrants, effectively obliterating the Fourth Amendment and its protection against unreasonable searches and seizures. To develop a counter-offensive, certain fundamental facts must be recognized. First, what is happening in Minneapolis is the spearhead of a broader conspiracy, to establish a military presidential dictatorship in the United States, developed systematically since Trump's return to power a year ago. Trump blurted this out at the World Economic Forum in Davos this week, declaring it is sometimes good to have a dictator. The democratic rights guaranteed in the Constitution and Bill of Rights are being obliterated, and the measures now being used against immigrants and protesters will be directed against all opposition, particularly in the working class. Second, Trump is not acting as a rogue individual, but as the political representative of the capitalist oligarchy. In the United States alone, the combined wealth of billionaires increased by $1.5 trillion, about 22%. During Trump's first year back in office, bringing their total holdings to roughly $8.2 trillion. Globally, billionaire wealth surged at three times the rate of the previous 5 years in 2025, reaching a record $18.3 trillion. The oligarchy has placed Trump in power because its interests are no longer compatible with democratic and legal forms of rule. The ruling class is waging a counter-revolution on every front, dismantling public education, gutting core social programs like Social Security, Medicare and Medicaid, and subjecting culture and intellectual life to the dictates of Wall Street. Corporations are using AI technologies to carry out mass layoffs across all industries. Third, the assault on democratic rights is inextricably connected to the eruption of American imperialism. In the first weeks of 2026 alone, the Trump administration has overseen an illegal military intervention in Venezuela, including the capture of President Nicolas Maduro, threatened war against Iran, demanded control over Greenland, and issued increasing provocations against the allies of US imperialism in Europe and North America. For a general strike to stop Trump's occupation of Minneapolis. To counter the rampage of the oligarchy, mass action is necessary. The sentiment for a general strike now emerging reflects the growing recognition that appeals to politicians, lawsuits, and electoral manoeuvres are incapable of countering the violence and criminality of the Trump regime. A general strike, however, is not a one-day protest or consumer boycott. It is the mobilization of the collective power of the working class, the producers of all wealth in society, to bring the machinery of exploitation and repression to a halt. That power must now be organized and directed against the conspiracy to establish a dictatorship. There is a powerful precedent for such a movement in the history of Minneapolis itself. In 1934, the city was the site of one of the most significant general strikes in American history, led by Trotskyist militants in the Teamsters. Workers defied the Citizens Alliance, the National Guard, and police repression. Despite shootings and martial law, they won decisive victories and laid the foundation for industrial unionism across the country. That tradition must be taken up again, in defense not only of workers' rights, but of democratic rights themselves. The fight against dictatorship in Minneapolis is the fight of workers everywhere, in the United States and internationally, who face the same crisis and have the same interests. A counter-offensive of the working class must be completely independent of the Democratic Party and the trade union apparatus. The Democratic Party is not an ally in the fight against Trump. It is a party of Wall Street, the Pentagon, and the intelligence apparatus, whose central objective is to contain and manage popular anger rather than mobilize a working class movement against dictatorship. In recent days, House Democratic leaders announced that they will ensure passage of a bill that fully funds the DHS and ICE. Whatever their hypocritical statements of concern over the killing of Renee Nicole Good, the Democrats have helped build up and deploy the deportation regime and the instruments of repression. Democrats, including Governor Tim Walz, Senator Bernie Sanders, and others advised those outraged over ICE's murderous actions to direct their attention to the courts and the midterm elections. This is political deception. Trump has already declared his intention to ignore court orders that go against him, and the Supreme Court is controlled by a fascist cabal. As for the elections, there is no guarantee that they will even take place, or that if they do, they will bear any resemblance to democratic norms. For its part, the response of the trade union apparatus to the growing support for a general strike has been to suppress and counteract sentiment for mass struggle. The unions that have nominally backed the protest, such as the Teamsters, the CWA, the SEIU, and the nurses' unions, have told their members that they cannot strike, citing no-strike clauses that the apparatus negotiated and enforces. This is under conditions in which the Trump administration is obliterating every legal and constitutional constraint on state violence and refuses to investigate Good's killer. To carry forward the struggle, the Socialist Equality Party and the International Youth and Students for Social Equality therefore call for the formation of rank-and-file committees in every workplace, school, and neighbourhood. Rank-and-file committees must take the initiative out of the hands of the bureaucracies, establish democratic control over the struggle, and begin to coordinate strike action and mass resistance from below. Resolutions must be adopted, calling for open-ended strike action, with clearly articulated demands: the immediate arrest and prosecution of Renee Nicole Good's killer, the withdrawal of all federal paramilitary forces, including ICE, DHS, and the CBP, the abolition of these repressive agencies, and the release of all detainees in ICE custody. Coordinating committees must be built to unify these rank-and-file bodies across industries, cities, and states, and link them with workers internationally. The International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, the IWA-RFC, provides the framework for this struggle, and we urge all those who want to build a real movement to join it. It is impossible to fight fascism and dictatorship without fighting the social system from which they arise. The source of Trump's assault on democratic rights is the domination of society by a capitalist oligarchy, a tiny layer of billionaires whose wealth and power are incompatible with democracy. The entire political establishment, including the Democratic Party, is committed to preserving this social order. Capitalism has reached a historic dead end. To defend jobs, wages, education, healthcare, and democratic rights, the working class must build its own independent political movement to challenge the dictatorship of the banks and corporations and fight for socialism. The Socialist Equality Party calls on all those who agree with this perspective to join us, build rank-and-file committees, and take up the fight to mobilise the working class in the United States and internationally for a socialist future. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.